All right, dude, we're back. Aaron, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. I appreciate you asking me to come chop it up.
Yeah, dude. So I get nervous at the beginning. It goes away after
every, a minute. Every time he gets nervous.
Because, like, yeah, I don't want to do this, like, cheesy, like, sage thing.
Yeah.
No, but you seem like a really fucking cool dude. And we've never really hung out or been, like, friends. We've been acquaintances, you know. But you're doing some cool shit. And I've always liked you. I've always been fucking happy and upbeat and energetic, so...
Appreciate it. I appreciate
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Well, now we're catching up. We're meeting up. We're brushing shoulders and talking shit. And
yeah.
Hopefully we'll get to know each other a little bit better.
Yeah.
If we don't ask too many heavy questions here.
Maybe heavy questions will bring us closer.
I mean, maybe. It's possible.
So, I know it was COVID and everything, but I feel like you kind of disappeared for a little bit. You want to talk about that?
I mean, yeah, we're just going to jump right into the heavy stuff.
Jumping right in.
Oh, man. Yeah, COVID was, I actually had a relapse prior to COVID. So I think it was in June of last year. So almost, further back than that. It was like the June prior.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I have 11 months now.
Okay.
And I was out for almost a year. So I was working it back to basics. Not working a program. My program was back to basics, which I think is kind of, you know, a classic struggle that dudes who've worked there have had. And,
yeah,
I went out on a sick one, like with a vengeance, like started while I was working at B2B, was getting loaded, working there. And I had put in my notice. So I got loaded, put in my notice, and I had just taken a position that I didn't need to be trained on. We had somebody kind of leave overnight, and I didn't need to get trained up. Really quickly was, you know, overwhelmed, stressed, not working a program, getting resentful, and got high. And like, I think within about 3 weeks, I hit up the program director and I was like, hey, I'm ready to move on. I, of course, was not honest with him. I wasn't going to blow the ship up, you know, right, but I was like, hey, I got to bounce, you know, like I got to get the hell out of here. I was put in kind of an interesting position because they asked me to basically find somebody to take my position and train them. You know, so that could be anywhere from like a 2 week to a 2 month, you know, process. Yeah. So it was compromised and, you know, was getting loaded on trips and it was messy.
Yeah. You were like their like wilderness guy.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I embodied the outdoorsman lifestyle, you know,
and you do.
I try to, it's simmered a little bit, but yeah, it's downward spiral. I ended up getting out of there kind of just in the nick of time. You know, dudes were kind of noticing I was off.
Yeah.
And got out of there. And then it was just no accountability, a lot of money saved up, and just a huge spiral.
Fuck
like,
yeah.
Bad.
Sweet. So what is your drug of choice?
Methamphetamine.
Tight.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
Hard. And I like to sprinkle it with some heroin and, you know, in this day and age, a little, you know, some fentanyl or, you know, something to balance it out.
Yeah.
Right.
Can't be up all the time.
I don't know if I ever did fentanyl. I'm kind of sad about it.
Yeah.
It was kind of before or after or us getting sober. Right. But was there like a degree of paranoia while you're like getting high, like on the trips? Because you're spending like a week with these guys, right?
Yeah, there was. I was like, I think I was pretty, what's the word I'm looking for? I kind of isolate myself on the trips.
Right.
It was like, hey, I can manage, you know, coming up with logistics for the trip. I can manage getting them out there, taking them to a cool place and bringing them back safe. And that was about it.
Right.
As far as like facilitating the AA meetings, that was not happening anymore. And I kind of just put it on the other staff. I'd go hang out in my tent. I was crusty. I was resentful. I was short with dudes, which is not my style.
Right.
I was always very involved and wanting to have fun. But paranoid, I don't know. I think I was just tired. I was like tired and beat down and was feeling bad about myself and you know, what was going on in my life and me having to pretend to be somebody on these trips.
Yeah.
It was like the big facade, you know? So yeah, a little paranoid for sure. Towards the end, when dude started to notice stuff, you know, I was hearing whispers. I got asked to come and take a drug test. I was like, oh shit, here we go.
So, well, drug addicts can always spot, you know.
I don't know what I was thinking. And I had a bunch of sickos in that crew. You know, I should have known better, but
I like spot them right away. They hire new guys at work. I'm like, he ain't going to last long.
Yeah, he's just full sicko. yeah, that was kind of that. And, you know, that went on for probably another 9 months, pretty heavy. So that was not meth. So that initial relapse wasn't meth. It was heroin. And I knew I was totally compromised. I knew that I was going to have to get some sort of treatment. Like fully yeah. physically addicted. I was like, okay, I'm not going to be able to do this on my own. So I got a new job, and it was in September. And I think I left Back to Basics in July, end of July. So I was like, oh, I got like a month and a half to get clean. Didn't want to blow my spot up. So I found this, it was called a Rapid Advanced Detox. And they, it was in Pontiac, Michigan. Didn't tell anybody about it. Flew out there, paid $9,000 cash for them to put me under anesthesia and hit me with Vivitrol. That was like my first, okay, I'm going to get this figured out.
Yeah.
And it didn't work. I mean, you know, it worked for what it was, but it was scary and it was intense and it was quick. And then within a week of me being back home, it was like meth, heroin again. I mean, it was like, it was a bit of a shot in the dark, but yeah, went through that. And then it was the full downward spiral, like selling the truck, like, yeah, moved into a school bus.
Yeah, yeah. I was just about to ask about that.
The school bus, yeah. The infamous school bus. You can hear me before you can see me. Coming down black, the road. Dude. Yeah, white and black. White. It looked like a prison bus. Is what it looked like. It was my prison. Yeah, yeah. Living in a school bus. Had a couple of companions with me. Had a couple of ducks and a mastiff.
How is your dog?
The dog's good. He's good.
Mina. You've met that's Mina what before, it was. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah, she'd always come over when I was cooking steaks.
Right.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Waiting for some scraps.
Yeah. So, Michigan, came back, and then you went to, like, up in Utah, right? You were doing...
Mm-hmm.
Did you do, like, a wilderness detox type thing?
No, I actually took another therapeutic guiding position while I was loaded. Which was really unfortunate. I think that's what that, like, me going up to Michigan was all about. It was like, okay, I'm going to get off the shit. I'm going to go take this other job where nobody knows me. And was kind of on this, like, I relapsed, but was not, like, fully on the shit. Right. It was, still, like, week still on, functioning. Couple weeks off. Yeah. That was where the meth was, like, I kind of stayed somewhat away from the opiates. The opiates are what really, like, they tear me to pieces quick.
Right.
You know, the meth, I can kind of like a little 3-day bender.
Right. Go to sleep, eat some food, get back to it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I took another gig up in Utah, and that was short lived. That was like, I do 2 weeks in the field. I do 2 weeks off. And the whole time I was off, I was getting loaded. Never got loaded in the field at this program I was at, but came in, I think it was around January or February, came in and they drug tested me and I popped. And the nurse is like, oh, Aaron, like, we'll get you another test. It must have been a malfunction. I'm like, no. Like, don't even. Let's not do this. Like, let me just talk.
You're like, yeah, sure. Give me a call.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotta go.
Yeah. And I kind of fessed up pretty quick and, you know, had a little emotional chat about, you know, hey, I think I need to, you know, boogie and get my shit figured out. Still wasn't ready. You know, it was like, I'm a classic, like, bang my head up against the wall until I realize it hurts really, really bad. And that's what I did. It was like, I had money in the bank and like, I was not going to stop until it was all gone. Yeah. And I think towards the end, it was like, I didn't think I was going to make it anyways. You know, I'm like, hey, that's what I got. I got, you know, around 3 years clean. It was fun. I enjoyed it. And, you know, now it's on a cracking. It's time to fucking rumble. So,
yeah.
So, what was like, so you pop dirty and then just like downward spiral, right? What was like the day before you decided to like get clean again, try it this last time?
Oh, is that, well, sheesh. It was like one thing after another. It was I think when I look at it now, the perspective I have now, it was a lot of like God shots that I was just unaware of at the time.
Right.
And looking back, you know, I think mid Floyd riots and like COVID craziness. I'm in a bus. I'm like high on methamphetamine. I've been up for 10 days. I am losing my shit.
Yeah.
And I had this little hobby of like buying firearms in the state of Arizona, which is quite easy to do.
Yeah.
You know, you buy it right out of the trunk in a Walmart parking lot.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
And
we support that.
Okay.
Maybe sweet. Not on that, but okay.
Yeah.
You know,
all right, buying firearms. Second Amendment rights. Yeah. Yeah. Gotta have that. And I started driving him to California.
Oh,
okay. And was, you know, without disclosing too much, was just, you know, reconnecting and supporting other negative juju from my past.
Right.
And rekindling these kind of relationships in this way, like, hey, I have something to offer, like, because my community out here was blown, at least in my mind.
Right.
It was like, cool, yeah. I need to find my people again. And, you know, what better people to find that are, you know, gangy.
In the guns and drugs.
Yeah, yeah. High desert weirdos. Yeah. It's like, perfect.
Yeah. So up in, like, Hesperia, Apple Valley
yep,
and stuff.
Yep. Glen Helen, San Bernardino. Yeah. All in San Diego.
Yeah.
So got into this whole, like, persona of this. There's a great picture I'll show to you if I can find it on my phone, but I'm like in the bus, smoked out, picked to pieces. I've got a ski mask on, I'm shirtless, and I got this big old AK with this like 75 round drum clip, and it was like the epitome of where this run got me to. It was like a whole other person.
Yeah.
I'm usually like kind of hippie. I wouldn't call myself a liberal, but like outdoorsy, you know, protect our winters, like all this shit.
Yeah.
And you get me on meth and it is like full spectrum, like, you know, crazy right wing yeah. extremist. Yeah. It's kind of insanity.
I like to dance on the fence a little towards the right.
Yeah. Know? I'm definitely a fence dancer.
Yeah.
Like dip my toes in each side.
Yeah.
And then when arguments come, it's just depending on who's arguing what side, I can kind of poke that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I just like to argue with people.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, there was a moment there where it finally, like, everything just fell apart. You know?
Yeah.
I was down in my last couple bucks. I had like a farm of animals in my bus. What that was about, I have no idea.
That's kind of cool, though.
You're protecting nature,
like,
bro.
Like, no, like, you know, I know it was a bad situation,
yeah.
But, like, that's kind of, like, there's, like, a whole sort of, like, van and bus culture going on right now.
Where there
people,
is.
People are just, like, renovating these fucking buses and, like, yeah. U-Hauls into tiny homes and traveling around. So, like, it's not, like, out of place. The AK and the ski mask
yeah.
is, you know
yeah.
what I'm saying?
And the duck shit.
Yeah.
And the pick marks.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't quite
that
the
is.
Scene. But
right.
It was this bad. It was always this balance of, like, I think what never changed is that I wanted to be of, you know, ultimate use somehow.
Right.
Right. Like in AA, it's like helping others, you know, helps
yeah.
ourselves and gives us purpose and self-esteem. And, you know, being a tweaker living in my bus, it was like, oh, well, I could take care of these ducks and like, I'm still, which I could not do. You know,
yeah, yeah.
Some other stories of that, but like, I still wanted to like embrace this outdoor stuff. There were a couple like big ski incentives. I went and did high on methamphetamine.
Yeah.
It was still like me trying to prove something. You
yeah.
know, and just really scattered, you know, just all over the fucking place.
It's like this duality that you're living is like, oh, I can be outdoorsy and get high on meth and like have this persona, but still do like what I want to
yeah.
do on the side.
Yeah.
Right?
So. I mean, like full, like five panel schizo, like
yeah.
type shit, you know, is what it felt like when I look back at it.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
just like how many different personalities slash vibes can we get, you know?
Yeah. So speaking on like the ski trips, you've done some pretty badass ones. Like full up, hiked up to where like nobody else fucking goes and you just
ride down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
For sure. I did a couple 2 years ago that were down in Ecuador that were kind of like, they'd be like the training ground for people that want to go do stuff in, you know, Nepal and Tibet, like in that 8,000 meter realm.
Yeah.
So that's badass.
That's,
like, let me just put it that way.
That's freedom, bro.
Yeah.
That is
Tibet, Nepal, 8,000 meter badass. That's not quite where I was, but it was definitely like I was poking around at
yeah.
that like high intensity, you know, exposure, acclimatization. And it's an adventure. And it's like, I
yeah.
think being a meth addict and an ex-meth addict now, you know, is like there is this hole to be filled, right? And you can fill it with, you know, work, you can fill it with spirituality, you can fill it with service. And you know, I think my hole is a big one. There's a big fucking hole there, you know? And it was like the higher intensity shit I could put in there, the better.
Yeah.
You know, I definitely struggle with the balance of that. And, but yeah, it was really cool experience to go down there and do that. And, you know, I think helped me some self-esteem and some purpose and feeling good about myself. And you know, passionate about snowboarding and kind of pushing the, you know, possibilities, I guess, yeah, my own possibilities. So yeah, it was really cool.
What did those runs look like on the way down?
A lot of ice and cliff and rocks. So most of them, it's like, it's not really like skiing down. You're not like blowing through powder and like doing, you know, nice turns and stuff.
Kind of falling with style. Like
you don't want to fall.
Right.
Now if you fall, you're fucked. But it's a lot of like, almost like walking on. So I splitboard, a snowboard that like connects together. So you can walk uphill, put it together, and you go downhill. Skiers have it a little bit easier on that kind of terrain. Like they can step, they can like switch their skis around and like kind of maneuver through stuff. They have to straight line something, they can do it really quick. The snowboard's tough. It's a lot of like, to be honest with you, getting down that big thing in Ecuador was like a lot of like shimmying on my edge and then like doing a quick jump turn and then like a little straight line and then like throw a rappel in there, pull the rope out, get over the cliff band. It's like a lot of like chippy. It's not like smooth.
Yeah, like cross country.
Rides. Yeah, you're definitely not going straight down. No. You got to like stop and like plan out like where you're going next.
Yeah. So I think the incentive is to like get up and get down with your board on your
feet.
On your feet, and like that's a win. Like if you make it down and you know, semi unscathed, right?
Yeah.
So it's type two fun. Yeah. Definitely type two fun. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, hoping to do more of that. This year was tough in that we had a bad snowpack, scary avalanche snowpack in Colorado this year. And actually got myself on February 2nd, I got into a D2 avalanche, which is there's a 5 scale. It's like a 1, which is a little bit of snow, knock you off your feet. There's a 2, can bury you and kill you. There's a 3, which is like the side of a mountain comes down. 4 and 5 are taking down like full size trees.
Yeah.
Right. So that's a scale. So relatively small, but enough to scare the shit out of me.
Yeah.
So it was the beginning of kind of the backcountry season. And I've gotten on the board once since then. It was a nice shake up for me.
So
I kind of was like, all right, let me slow it down.
Do you have to like plan that stuff in advance and get like permits and stuff to do certain areas, or?
If you do it overnight, you got to do some permit stuff, but usually not. It's just like
hike up there and come back down.
You just hike up and come down. You hope you have a couple buddies with you that know what they're doing and you got the gear. But yeah, again, like another, like you can only plan so much. Like in that ski world, it's like if you're not on the resort, there's inherent danger, right?
Yeah.
That you can try to mitigate, but you know, at the end of the day, you're taking a risk regardless. And that was kind of in February. It was like, I thought I was doing my due diligence. I dug like a little snow pit and was checking the layers and everything looked good and got on this thing. And it was like, boom, like full whitewash, like underneath, couldn't hear anything, couldn't see anything. And somehow, this is the most recent God shot, head pokes out right as everything settles and head and shoulder out. And the buddy had to come over and help dig me out. But yeah, I looked back at it and I was like, that's fucking huge. Yeah, and like that thing should have killed me. So, you know, once again, learning the hard way. Classic. You know, like banging my head against the wall. So it's like, wake the fuck up.
Hey, you're bleeding, you know?
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So did you go to treatment?
I did.
Yeah.
I did again. In July 24th, I went in. So I did like kind of pseudo B2B. B2B would be like the mom and pop version.
Right.
This place puts in probably, you know, 40 guys at a time. They have like an outdoor component and they're 3 months instead of the 6 month. And then you can follow the intervals. There's like a 3 months like transition-esque and then 3 months of sober living. And yeah, I did the 3 month inpatient and then moved into a sober living in that area in Carbondale, Colorado.
Nice.
And that program was really, really cool. And another like God shoddy me even ending up out there. It was very like, I was supposed to be going to a sober living out there. I showed up, dragged my dad out, put everything in the truck. I'm like dragging him through the coals for a week, trying to get out there. He's like, fuck this. We get there and the bed is taken at the sober living house.
No.
So my dad's like, dude, I'm going to drop you off on the fucking side of the I-70 freeway with all your shit and figure it out. Like that's where he was at, and somehow ended up in this park in Carbondale, like a couple blocks away from the sober house. And I look up and I'm like, I fucking know this place. and it's this Jay Walker Lodge. It was literally like that. Like, we had no plans of ending up at the spot. And the clinical director and their whole team of, you know, admissions people came out after we gave them a call. And, you know, I was in there that afternoon.
Yeah, I almost went to Jay Walker, actually. I went to my first rehab was at Harmony in Estes Park. And so they have, like, you transit, you do Harmony for 30 days, and then you can go to Jay Walker after that. Yep. And then Carbondale, and that's kind of like the pipeline for them over there. So
yeah, it's a cool community. I mean, the community is like the AA community. It's such a small town, and there's such a big recovery presence there. Pretty unique. I haven't seen anything like it. Mm-hmm. And I've probably been to 20 treatment centers over my day.
Yeah.
So a really cool community with a lot of people that are doing really, really cool stuff. Yeah, a lot of people to look up to. A lot of mentors, you know, I've been like talking with a lot of people about what we're trying to put together in Flagstaff and getting good feedback of people kind of in that industry that are Jay Walker alumni and that are, you know, recovering addicts and alcoholics. So it was a really cool experience. It was like, when I look back at all the wreckage that was caused over that last relapse, like, and some of the wreckage that I caused in working at B2B while I was loaded, there were a lot of amends that went into that. And I don't think I'd change anything. I mean, it was, it's an experience that I'm looking at that, like, I can appreciate every piece of it that I walked away with. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, in that sense, I'm really, really glad that I ended up going through all this. Right. I was missing something fucking really crucial, you know. That's why, you know, you don't get loaded after 3 years for doing everything right.
Some sort of reservation in there, you know what I mean?
So. A reservation, not actively doing that, like 10-step stuff. Letting a resentment fester up and you know, not working with a sponsor. I never had sponsees that first time around. And I do now, and it's like I'm seeing kind of the other side of the whole deal.
The actual greener grass, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? Well, yeah, hopefully, right?
Yeah,
for sure.
Absolutely, yeah.
The other side of it that my sponsors would always say, they're like, you just wait. You know, like, just wait till you're watching somebody else's porch lights come on.
Yeah.
You know, not just your own. So, yeah, I'm stoked on it. It's been sweet.
So you're getting ready to, or trying to, start a sober living home, right?
We are. Yeah, we're opening. It's called Mountain House Recovery, and it's a sober living here in Flagstaff. We have 8 beds right now, and we're just kind of getting the furnishing all finished up. But the main idea is like a super basic, you know, sober living with curfew, drug testing, meeting requirements. And I think what we're trying to do to kind of give these, you know, future residents an edge is we have a coach, like a success life coach that'll be coming in a couple times a week. And if guys want to work with him on a personal level, they'll kind of, you know, work with him if they'd like to. And then some outdoor activities, some exposure, not quite like back to basics, like week long, high intensity stuff, but like taking the guys climbing down at Jack's Canyon, mountain biking in Sedona, fly fishing in Oak Creek, just that kind of stuff.
Right.
And then hopefully some community, like some healthy community enmeshment with Flagstaff. Like, I remember going through B2B and I had a community here, but they were all B2B alumni. Yeah. And B2B does a great job of creating this community where people can rely on each other. The problem is it can be kind of insulated.
Right.
You know, it's easy to let it be insulated. And I think they've been working on that a bunch. You know, it's been a while since I've been over there, but you know, my hope is that we can like get these guys involved in the community, whether it's through service or there's talk of like having a microgreens garden and going over to the farmer's market and having a presence there. The climbing gym, we're going to try and do some stuff with them. So it's an exciting, like small project, but hopefully some, you know, some good success out of it.
Yeah.
You know, keep it intimate and keep the culture good, you know, would be the hope. So,
How do you, how do you like find all these, like, I mean, it's just like fly fishing at Oak Creek, you know, like, how do you like, I mean, cause I try and stay like, you know, active on the weekends and shit. And like, after like 3 weekends, I run out of shit to do.
Right.
I don't know if that's just me, like not looking hard enough or, you know,
How do you
like find all these things to do, places to go?
The fishing thing, I actually started dating this gal in Carbondale and she's a professional fly fisher. Like that's her
deal. Really? That's badass.
It is. Okay. It's cool. She's great. She's profound and kind of watching her do her craft. So fly fishing, I have no exposure to hanging with her.
I think I'm a pretty good fisherman, but I've never touched a fly fishing.
You know? It's like this art. It's like almost like an art. You go out there and it's like, you're not going to catch shit until you kind of get to a certain level, which I'm not at by any means. My girlfriend like casts there. That's the only time I catch a fish. But it's a cool, like, it's almost like golf in the sense, like the golfers say, like, based on what your game looks like, that might be how your life is currently going, right? You know what I mean?
It's like a mindset type thing. Yeah.
It is totally like relaxed, calm, knowledge, practice, like all these things. So that would be my hope. And I hope by the time that this thing launches, like I'll be able to fish, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to like, send these dudes out there. But I think just outdoor activities in general, like, right, getting uncomfortable, like somebody invites you to go do something and you're like, ooh, I don't know. Like I've never done that before. You limit yourself to like what you've been exposed to, right? And like I think by saying, okay, fuck it, I'll try it.
Let's go.
Yeah. And then you get out there and you're like, oh, this is actually sick, you know? And then you've got one more thing that you can, hopefully go do. So that's my hope in this is right, just like giving guys an idea of what they could possibly be into.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always just try and say yes. Like, okay, I'll go check that out. Sounds sick.
Well, especially if it's like being provided for me, I guess. You know what I mean, too? Is like,
yeah, why not?
Yeah, exactly. What do I have to lose?
You're going to sit in your bunk at the
record. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Which I've done before, right?
Like, for sure, we all have. And usually those are the first to go. I think this one thing that I picked up from, God, even the first time I went through B2B was like the process of getting sober is so daunting. For me, because it's like, okay, I can get clean physically. I know that. I've proven it to myself.
But how do you stay clean?
But then what? How do I stay clean? And then even another one would be like, for what?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like if I have proven to myself over and over again that I am not going to amount to anything, i.e. like can't hold a job for 6 months. I'm fucking smoked out. All my girlfriends are sickos. My parents hate me. Whatever it is. It's like, then what? I get sober. Okay. The idea of staying sober, maybe that sounds like a lot of practice and work, but then what? Like why?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I think that eventually through good direction and like following through, like this time with my sponsor said, it wasn't so much about like why, but it was just like, hey, try this and it'll work. I think there's a lot of people though that don't, or that struggle embracing that.
Yeah.
Right? So giving them a little bit of reason on the back end of like, hey, this could be cool. Like maybe I could work at the climbing gym. Like, man, there's a lot of fun stuff to do when you're sober. There's a little bit more incentive for me to put in the work, right? So it's like a little teaser. It's like the little stake at the end of the fishing line with the dog that's chained up. You know? It's a matter of breaking the chain so you can go get the, the goods.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Like, I had no idea why. I just knew that I wanted to stay sober for I think the why came later on, right? It's like, I get some time together. It's like, why am I sober? It's like, well, I need to help other people. And I don't know when, like, those two correlated. And it doesn't happen for everybody, right? But the program kind of teaches us that, like, sooner or later, your purpose is to help others, right? Like, eventually down the line, whenever that is. And, like, if you told me that 30 days in, I'd be like, what the fuck are you smoking?
Yeah.
I mean, like, I ain't got shit to offer anybody, And then I think it was just being of service, right? It's like, wow, I actually can fucking help people. So I guess I should try to do that. So
it is. It gives us sickos a true purpose.
Right.
Right? That's, like, the self-esteem that they're talking about and, like, I think that balance of like trying to introduce somebody into the idea of helping another person is a lot more challenging than like giving them something fun to do,
right?
To get into a place where they're like, hey, okay, what now? But yeah, that's been the big thing, like in sponsorship this time around. I'm like, okay, like, this is what I want to do. Like I want to somehow, aside from the sponsorship, that's my own program, and my own A program. And how can I like do a healthy transfer of like what I know that I'm passionate about and maybe good at. Maybe I just think I'm good at it, but like, when you're a sicko junkie that's gone through a bunch of stuff, you've got that immediate rapport.
Right.
It's like, which makes it nice.
And
people trust you, it's like, and I trust sick motherfuckers that are well now too, more than I do like a doctor who's telling me like, oh, you're an addict, blah, blah, blah. So
just take this every day.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, who are you? I mean, like in treatment, the therapists who weren't drug addicts were always the ones that caught the most heat from the residents. Right? Yeah. And it was like, yeah, after a while I'm looking like, geez, like they, you know, what, you got to be a dope fiend to like get the respect of another dope fiend. And on a lot of levels, like, yeah, you do.
Yeah.
You know? At least in that, in somebody giving you feedback about how to get straight.
Right. I think it has to do with like, there's like certain lows that only like somebody like myself or you have experienced, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And there, it's like, how do you want me to talk and relate to somebody and to get over this when you don't know what I've been through?
Right. It's like, you say you were up for 10 days. I'm like, well, shit, me too. Yeah. I've also done that. You know what I mean?
You feel it. You can empathize with it. Yeah. You can just read it in a book, like symptoms, you know, DSM-5 or whatever it's called. It's like
actually seeing the shadow figure emerge out of the fire.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was like shooting at him in the desert. You know, I'm like, I see him coming. That's a true fucking story. I mean, like, yeah. Many of long nights hanging out up on the Navajo Nation in that bus. Just like, which is so funny because it was like...
What part of the Navajo Nation?
Where all over the place. I was hanging out by just south of Bluff on the other side of the San Juan River there.
Okay.
So like, I think Tiknos Post, like north of Tiknos Post. I used to just like go wherever the fewest people were.
Yeah.
And it wasn't hard during COVID.
Right.
And I was definitely had this like fantasy that the COVID was going to turn people into zombies and they were going to come after me. Like, pretty damn real thought. I was like, this is like the world's going to end and like I'm going to be the last like tweaked out frontiersman on the edge of the Navajo Nation. Like, so, yeah, it was, and the nation was like got fucked up by COVID.
Yeah,
so I don't know why I chose to go out there. I don't even know how I got through there because they had it closed down for a bit. But there was nobody out there. It was like, you know, tweakers paradise for a bit.
They locked down that shit. There was curfew, everything.
They're still kind of locked down too.
They are.
Their whole tourism industry is still kind of fucked.
For sure.
Because they're still not doing Antelope Canyon tours.
Oh, and that whole zone is like total junk show. If they open that up, then there'd be outbreaks for sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
maybe. You know. COVID could be a lie.
I mean, at this point, anybody who wants a vaccine can get one. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. Run it. You know?
At that point, I think it's
personal choice. I'm super left-leaning. So at this point, like, I'm just like, if he dies, he dies. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, whatever, you know, go get a shot or don't.
I don't know about all that, dude. All right, whatever.
I know. I'm kind of on the like, without diving too into it, it's just like, I just don't know what to believe.
Dude,
and it's like, so like, I'm just kind of like, I know that I know COVID's real because I had the shit. And it was like, I was hurt for like 3 days and had to do that whole isolating deal. But I also have a bunch of buddies that are like, have gotten this vaccine and gotten laid out on their back.
Yeah. I had a buddy go to the hospital. He had an allergic reaction. He was in the hospital within 24 hours.
Dude. Yeah.
My second vaccine dose, it felt like I was coming down off of heroin. Like, it fucked me up for 24 hours. It was like, I cannot remember feeling that sick before. And I just woke up in the middle of the night and it was like my legs hurt, my back hurt, and I was hot, cold sweat. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, am I coming off of a bender right now?
Right.
But now, you know, next day I was fine. So I was like, whatever.
Yeah. I know. I probably should, you know, my dad gives me a bad time, but you get your vaccine. You're not allowed to come out here and visit your mom and I until you get one. I'm like, perfect.
Thank you.
But probably if they started saying you got to get them, then I probably would. But it seems like everything's kind of easing up. It's like, we'll walk around the grocery store without a mask today.
But we just went to a fucking comedy show. Yeah. Not a single fucking person.
Not a fucking person. 5,000 people, dude. Arizona. Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
It was tight, dude. I
saw like 3 people maybe out of 5,000 wearing, like, who weren't staff at the venue wearing a mask.
Yeah. So weird. It's like, the funny part is, though, is like, even the people that are really, really heavy, like, super, super heavy left and that are like, whatever, like maybe not anti, I don't know all the political terms. They're just like not into it, but like people that are like, you know, like full on, you know, mask, brick through the window, like all the crazy, you know, taking over the city halls and stuff. I think even they're tired of wearing masks, you know, and like when I'm driving around Colorado, I see very few people wearing them unless they absolutely have to. And it's like, hey, if you're asking me to wear a mask, cool, I will. But like, you know,
I don't need to. That's how I am.
So leave me alone.
I'm like of the firm belief, like live and let live. If you want to get the vaccine, get the vaccine. You don't. Like, you're choosing to take that risk wherever that risk lies. Like, you know, let people fucking live.
Yeah. Dude. And just being respect, you know, it's like, I'm not going to go to grandma and grandpa's place coughing all over, you know.
Dude.
And touching everything.
Common sense, dude. Yeah.
It's just, not very common, though.
Let's just respect people. I don't want to talk about COVID.
I know. Jeez.
Jesus.
As if it hasn't been long enough.
Yeah. So, shooting at night terrors, huh?
Shooting night terrors. Oh, man.
How'd you afford the ammo?
You know what? I had a bunch of money saved up, and then I had my Toyota Tacoma. I had a 15 Tacoma that had like 100,000 miles on it, and I bought this bus for like $6,000. And my big idea was like I was going to live in the bus. I'd leave the truck. When I'd come back into town, I'd drive the truck. Well, then when I started to get low on money, I like went through my savings account and I sold the truck and I got $18,000. And I was like, sweet. You know, so ammo, lots of, you know, I was like classic, like pick up in really large amounts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I would not need to come back into civilization for like a month. There was one time I really did not, like, aside from like getting some gas, like just did not come into towns. You know,
yeah.
Like out in Bear's Ears, like way out, like east of or west of Blanding, like hit out dogs, ducks. I had a big AK and this like PSL 54R. It was like this big Dragunov thing.
Yeah.
And I used to sit out there. And of course, I bought a bunch of Tannerite. I've got like my zone, and I'm like placing Tannerite up on the hills as like a barrier, as if like the COVID people are going to come over the hills. And I'm going to be like shooting the Tannerite and blowing them up like in a Vietnam movie. It got so weird. It was like such an interesting time and drug and like isolated. That combination was just like, it was full fantasy land.
You're kind of lucky you didn't fucking kill someone. Probably, you know what I'm saying?
I'd say so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or somebody didn't kill me.
I mean, right. Yeah. Like, or like either way, you know, because I mean, some people fucking, there's a B2B guy fucking strung out and stabbed someone, you know what I'm saying? Like just from.
He just got out. Yeah.
Oh, is he out now?
He's out.
That's fantastic.
I know.
Yeah.
And that's what that drug does.
Yeah.
It's like, it gets you. And I get my thing was like, I'd get paranoid, but I knew that I was getting paranoid.
Right.
And there were certain things that would like stay, right? Like the COVID thing. It was like, did I think they were really going to turn into zombies? No, not really. It was just like something but just exciting in case, to think about.
Right. Yeah. You know? Just in case they did. I'm ready.
Yeah. Yeah. And it could have happened. And there were a lot of incidents. I think I drove from, I was trying to get the dog and the ducks to safety. I knew that it was like my life was probably going to end before theirs, and I didn't want to be stranded.
This is like the beginning of like a zombie movie, you know?
Yeah, dude, it is.
A guy out in a bus with some ducks and a dog.
Yeah, like just totally weird shit. Tarantino for sure.
Yeah,
just like
yeah.
Blood and drugs, dude. And like, so I'm driving, I'm in Flagstaff, I kind of geared up, and I had to drop off two of these firearms to a buddy. So I had like, incentive to go down there, I was going to make a couple bucks. And then I was supposed to go to treatment in Bali, actually. I got $7,000. They were going to fly me to Bali. And so I'm headed up to Northern California and to get the ducks and everything back. And I got pulled over like, I don't know how many times. Once on the way from Flag to Phoenix, another time in between Phoenix and LA, and then twice on the I-5. Because it was literally the middle of the Floyd riots. It was like when I was driving down past Black Canyon City, there was like an Amber Alert sign. And it was like, stay inside. It was like martial law.
Yeah.
It was like, you are not allowed to leave your house. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? Like, am I tripping? Like, is this like, what is going on?
Did it happen while I was out there?
Yeah. So there were a bunch of incidents where cops came and it was like, you know, because I'm the only car besides trucks on the freeway.
Yeah.
And I'm in this rink-dink bus, you know, like windows down, like blonde hair flying out, picked out. Like, I don't know what these guys were thinking, but they pull me over and it would be like, hey, where are you headed? And it was always this like, hey, do you know what's going on right now? And like, I'm like, this was my go-to. And I think it saved me each time. I don't want to blame it on that. Like, I don't want to put it on this. I think that there was something larger at play when I look at it. Because, you know, five or six police contacts in one drive and not getting, by means, like, bus full of guns and a lot of drugs.
And a duck.
Like, it would have been, I would have been playing tennis in Lompoc feds, you know, 2040 if they got in there. But I do the cough. I'd have the mask on, I'd kind of cough, and I'd be like, oh, I'm going to quarantine at my parents' house. And those fucking cops wouldn't get anywhere near me. It was like, they'd have two cop cars there. They're like talking and they're like, just go ahead.
Yeah.
And it was like that every fucking time. It was crazy. And it was all just getting pulled over because I was the only, swinging dick on the road. It was like,
well, I mean, at the beginning too, like nobody had any real idea, you know, there was like all this fear and like
cops were scared.
Yeah.
Right. There's like these riots going on. They're like, who's going to, who's going to shoot at me?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm glad that they didn't, because there were a couple of times where I was so whacked out that like if some shit went down, like I don't know what I would have done.
Right.
Yeah. It was like, 20 years in federal prison or like, death by police.
Yeah.
When you're methed out, like hard decision to make, honestly, So who knows what, I'm glad that things went the way they did. Right.
Yeah.
It's all part of the strange story of like how in the hell I ended up back at Jay Walker with my dad, like helping flip the bill. It was like, I was like, dude, this is crazy. Yeah.
I'm trying to picture it and I just,
I just got a new phone. There were some, I had some really, really good pics of kind of like, I actually have, I'll show you after this, but I have some stuff on that.
Please.
Ooh, that's not what we're looking for.
No. I'm glad you're listening to it though.
Yeah. I'll show you some snaps after this, but there's some, it's pretty epic. Hard to watch.
Well, I hate looking at pictures of me when I was like my aunt's got a picture above her fucking fire, or she did before she moved, a picture above her fireplace. Like me and my brothers one Christmas, and I'm like this pale fucking smoked out dude.
Smoked.
And I'm just like, why the fuck is that up there?
She didn't know. She was like, oh, it's my baby nephew. Yeah.
My nephew's. Oh, yeah. Takes a picture.
Yeah, I've got a couple of those too.
It's rough. Yeah. First, like the Facebook clean out. I just dealt with this. A buddy of mine had something posted of me during this run. It was like the seventh picture in the count, in the lineup on his Instagram post. And it was like me just like torn to pieces, looking like Shaggy out of Scooby-Doo mixed with like a zombie apocalypse sort of look. And I'm holding a duck. And Nina's right there with this bewildered look staring at me. And I had to call someone like, dude, like what? Like, what is this doing on your Instagram, dude? Like, get this shit out of here. So he pulled it off. But you deal with, it's like it's part of the shit,
Yeah.
Probably owe him an amends. I was like hanging out on his couch. Scared,
So, I mean, I know I shouldn't like glorify drug use, but I just love hearing like the stories, the real sick ones, do you have any like... I know you probably do, but like before you got to B2B for the first time, like what was life like before you started this journey? Oof. It said it'd been like 20 rehabs, right?
A lot. There were a couple of years where it was like a lot of 30 days. Okay. Right? Like mom, I was
spin
like,
dries, yeah.
Yep. And I was like, most of them were like, I'd call my parents. Like I'm like destitute out on the street, like fresh out of county jail. And roaming around with nothing and calling mom and being like, okay, like, can I come move home? And it was always a stipulation of like,
go to rehab first and then you can come home. Yeah.
And my poor parents, geez, like talk about a financial hindrance. I mean, I wouldn't even want to tally that up, of like how much went into that process when I wasn't ready. But, it was like a lot of the same stuff. I like did a lot of bouncing around, like pinballing. I was, Northern California. I was down in SoCal. I like lived down in Central America for a little bit.
I did. Doing drugs down there too?
20. Oh, I've done drugs all over the motherfucking place. Yeah, I did drugs in Burma. I shot heroin like in a full-on shooting gallery, like Southeast Asia style, like buku bang up, like whole deal. I was doing a lot of blow when I was in Central America. That was like before the heroin and meth took off. Yeah. I was like 19, 20. When I was down there and getting really drunk and like getting robbed a lot. Yeah. It's like everywhere I went, the drugs.
You ever think about writing a book?
I have been, this is really funny. You mentioned that. So because of all these escapades, like my dad, I think at a certain point after going through Al-Anon, he was like, hey, if I want a relationship with my kid, I just need to accept him for who he is. And I'm not going to enable his shit.
Right.
And he did a really good job balancing that, but I'd be down specifically like in Central America. I was like homeless out in Minnesota for a while. And I'd hit him up and, you know, like any good addict does, and I try and swindle him out of a couple bucks. You know, like, Dad, I need, you know, here's what's going on. I need help with this.
Yeah.
And he started doing this thing where it was like, if I wrote 2 pages, single space, 12 font, he'd send me $10. And they were like blogs. You know, he's like, well, I want to know, you know, you wouldn't hear from me like 6 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd call him out of the blue for $100. You know, and he'd be like, the fuck? Like, yeah, where have you been? And I'm like, Dad, I don't have time. You got to send this 100 right now. And he's like, here's the deal. So he's got like, I've got him. I mean, they're in my email somewhere, but probably like 150 pages of like these goofy blogs, like right when it was going down. So they're like really detailed, like homeless shelters, like, you know, the funk that I was getting into down in, you know, Honduras or Guatemala, wherever the heck I was at that, you know, particular point. They're good. They're good. They're like, yeah. And I'm like trying to like, you know,
sort through that. Like, how do you, yeah.
I was like, Jesus. When I look back at it, it's like, wow, this was a lot, you know? And I think when I look back at it, like between the high intensity and the just like that can't get right mentality, I was always looking for something, you know, of just like wanting more, but not wanting to put in the commitment and energy. Right. So it was just like a whole lot of like shots in the dark, but like high intensity shots in the dark. Like, here, I'm going to steal this and get on a one way flight to fucking Guatemala City. You know, it's like that'll make for a good story regardless. You know? So no matter what happens, and there's a lot of that, like a lot of my early and into my mid 20s was just chaos, just like utter chaos, especially for like, you know, I grew up in a nice neighborhood, you know, with parents that can, you know, that have done really well for themselves.
Yeah.
And have always helped me. So it's an interesting combo. People are like, hear stuff and they're like, you're full of shit. And I'm like, dude, talk to the old man, dude. He was there to pick me up at the airport. You know, like, so just kind of a lot of just hecticness.
But. So was there like a language barrier down there between like,
I got decent at speaking spit. You know, I could get what I want.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Drug stuff came first. The chiva, the coca, the mota,
like, all
the
stuff. Es mota.
Yeah. And then as I'd get like more intoxicated, my Spanish would get better. But they did used to say, like when I go down there, they go, you sound like an uneducated local. I was like, what does that mean? They're like, your grammar and your vocab's trash, but like you have this really good accent. So I was like, oh, whatever that works.
Cool.
Yeah.
So. Did you... I'm only asking this. It's kind of off topic, but did you happen to do ayahuasca while you were down there?
Not ayahuasca. I did, and it wasn't while I was down in Central America, but when I was, I don't know, maybe 23. It was in between one of the times I was at B2B. My parents go to this seminar in Noe Valley, and they're like at wit's end. They're like, "What the fuck do we do with this dude? Yeah. Like, we have sent this dude to, you know, 20 treatment centers." 15 probably at that time, and they get introduced to this ibogaine, which is this West African hallucinogenic from Sierra Leone. You know, it's like a tribal medicine. And they find this place in Mexico that does, you know, uses it for opiate treatment. And I think its claim to fame was like, you don't go through a detox and it's like a hard drive reset in your pleasures.
You fucking trip balls for like a certain amount of hours and then like you're fixed, right? Yeah. It's like I remember when people were talking about ibogaine.
Well, it rewires your neural pathways while you're doing this.
And the weird part is it feels like that. It feels like your brain is like making microwave noises. It's crazy. And I was another situation. It was like the thing in Michigan. Like, I had no idea what to expect. I get on a flight to San Diego. Some Hispanic dude picks me up and drives me into Tijuana. And I'd been there before, like as a California kid, and go down to Cinco de Mayo. And it's crazy. And I was like, geez, am I real? Like, I'm like shot out, like detoxing off heroin. And they're driving me into Mexico.
Yeah, if you're like, am I going to get kidnapped right now? Like, dude,
it was funny because you go down, you fast for a couple of days, and they talk about it. And there were like 8 of us. And you're in this house in Rosarito, this nice house. You're like eating all this organic food and shit. And they're like, all right, it's time. And everybody's tripping. Like, everybody's detoxing, and everybody's tripping before the trip.
Right.
Like, people are fucking spooked. And you go into this, like, in central Tijuana, this like 5-story like hospital building. And you're in a triage unit and they're hooking you up to IVs. Meanwhile, they can't find a vein on you. So they're talking about doing this, like, it's like injected into one of your like heart valves to like get a PICC line in. when they can't hit your veins.
That's fucking crazy.
So I was freaking out. Yeah. They had this big old like needle out, and I'm like, fuck that. And finally they let me use the needle. Yeah. I was like, I got one. I know
I won't let you do that in the US, dude.
We got the PICC line in, we're in there, and they dose you up slowly based on your weight. So they can give you a pill. And they put this like African tribal music on. It's like, oh, you know, this
the
whole
congos.
Yeah, the drums. Like, I feel like I'm in West Africa. Yeah, like, close my eyes. I'm like, holy shit, I'm there. And then they have this little thing that shoots light up onto the ceiling, like these tiny lights. And it moves around. So it's like the solar system or something.
Like stars and.
Moves really slow, almost so slow you can't see it. And I'm asking the guy who's coming and dosing me up. I'm not, like, he's giving me my third dose. And I'm like, how do I know when it starts? And he looks at me. He's like, you would know, my friend. Like, you would know. And I'm like, holy. I'm like, okay. And then sure enough, it was like all of a sudden I look up and all those lights just start zooming like circles. And I'm like plastered to the bed. There was some like hallucination stuff. The dude next to me, I looked over and he was trying to talk. And I saw these like very like turkey human visuals. Like he was like a gobbling like rooster sort of creature. And then came like the brain frying sound, and then it was like some weird imagery of like my past, but you're just incapacitated. It's like not a fun trip.
Yeah.
It's just like, this is fucked up, and like, this better fucking work.
It's like a 50s drug commercial, you know, the microwave going and then your brain is scrambling.
It was so fucking weird. And like, it's like not illegal in the US. So you're sitting there tripping and it's like, what if I like don't come out of this?
Yeah.
Like, what if I'm like fucked, you know? And we came out of it fine. And the biggest thing I remember was like, they have to like reteach you for like an hour. Like they're like walking you around because you like don't know how, like your like body or your mind doesn't remember how to walk. And you're like, your voice is jumbled. Like I could like barely get words out. And they put you in the shower and I was like a cooing little baby under the hot water. It was like, I had never experienced hot water before. Fucking really weird. And then it kind of fades off and you're like, all right, cool. I'm like feeling good, ready to go home. And right before you leave, the day before they send you back up to San Diego, they have you smoke 5-MeO-DMT from this Sonoran desert toad gland.
Like 90%.
Like the real deal. Like there's some dude who goes and chases toads around and like extracts this stuff and you smoke it in this dim room in this like hacienda. In it was in Rosarito, like South Ensenada, and I'm like, or North Ensenada, but that was really cool.
Yeah,
that was like my favorite part of the whole thing. I was like, sweet, this was worth all, this was worth everything. And that didn't, you know, that it was a matter of time. It was like I came home, and it was a really cool experience. And there were people down there that were like had gone through that. They were years clean. But I think what it really lacked was like an aftercare. They
like post therapy kind of. So like with the, I'm not for or against psychedelic therapy. I just want to say that to people listening. I don't know. I'm not a fucking scientist. I'm not a doctor.
But it is cool, right?
It's
like
it's a cool idea.
To use a drug to get off of drugs. Right. It's and, every addict's fantasy.
Right. And, yeah. And so, but. From my understanding, and I've done a little bit of research, is that they're having pretty significant results with like the psychedelic and then and therapy during and post.
Yeah.
Right? Because like it resets everything, but like if you don't do anything to like wire those neurons the correct way, they just go back to where they were. You know? So like you have like you're doing therapy to confront these things and to realize like where your choices are being made and how like before the reset, like you would make these choices and then you're reset and you take the therapy and they talk you through and you rewire your brain to like these right choices.
For and sure. Specifically, for sure. This has to deal with like trauma. You know what I mean? Like like, I want to kind of like separate like drug addiction and like,
and
they are intertwined.
They
this
all,
is, this is with like psilocybin treatment and like dealing with PTSD. Right.
Uh-huh.
Which is like really cool. You know what I mean? Like if you can help people like get over that kind of shit, you know what I mean? Like,
it's like, well, do what you got. Like, I'm a big advocate for like, do what, you know, try it all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, if you find something that works, cool, you know, like it happens to be that like AA has been working for me
thus far
for the past 11
months. And that's where I'm at.
Great.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm not going to deter. I've had people call me and be like, what was your experience with like ex-B2B clients, parents calling me up, like, what was your experience with Ibogaine? Like, this little homie's relapsed. And I'm like, it was really cool. And it was like profound. But like, if he does it, like, make sure you find some sort of step down. And the weird thing about the Ibogaine thing was like, they were like talking, like openly talking shit about AA.
Right.
You know, they were like, oh, AA is shame-based. And like, AA is very like inside the box and like limiting and all this stuff. And I, at that time, I didn't vibe with AA. So I was like, sure. Yeah, yeah. Cool. Like, yeah. Tell me what to do. And they didn't tell me what to do. You know, it was like, they put me on a flight back home and I was loaded in a week. So, but I do like that idea. You know, I'm not against or opposed to the frontier of like, you know, hallucinogenics and being helpful, especially in trauma.
Yeah.
Like, it's a huge topic and a spectrum that's massive. Like, all of us
right.
have trauma.
Right.
You know, yeah. on all sorts of levels. So whatever works, you know, will I go do ketamine treatment? Probably not. You yeah. know, like I have, it's a balance scale.
Yeah.
It's like,
as cool as it sounds, I know yeah. where it's going to take me,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Just like every other relapse. Like, once you put that shit in, yeah. it's like, it is, for me, it's on and cracking.
Yeah.
Like, there it's is the
same,
no.
Same for me too. It's like, no, you try to microdose me with psilocybin, I'm going to go find a shroom dealer and yeah. start dosing myself. Right. You know what I'm saying? That's, yeah. that's what I'm doing.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And then it's the whole balance game of like, oh, yeah. it's bringing me too low. Like, I know it's going to get me up. You know?
Let's
see, yeah. I'm at
the meth house. You know? Let's drop a whole sheet of acid instead. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And then I'm shooting up meth and, right. you know, yeah, that's where I'm at too.
Sicko stuff.
Yeah, I just love it.
I love it. I
love it so much.
Embracing, yeah. you gotta embrace the inner sicko and like use it to change the world. Right? Yeah. It's like, how can we do that? Like, yeah. that's the goal, right?
It's so funny. I was like getting lunch with my GM, and his mom is kind of in recovery. He's from Hawaii, and they've got, you know, all sorts of fucking crack and meth problems on the islands. But he's just like, so do you get paid? Did you, because he knows, like, I go to meetings and shit. He's like, so they pay you for this, like, volunteer work? I'm like, nah, dude. Like,
yeah.
I have to give what I have away, you know what I mean? In order to stay sober. And it was like weird seeing him like not kind of fully understand, right? You know what I mean? This guy who's like general manager of a hotel, fucking probably smokes weed and, you know, worked in restaurants his whole life. So I'm sure he's done some coke, you know what I mean? And I'm just like, nah, man, like, I don't really. Like, there's no like physical gain out of this, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
And it's just weird trying to explain that to other people.
It's a foreign concept. Yeah. yeah. Super foreign concept.
Yeah.
I think naturally people are like
fucking selfish
and self-centered. Not yeah. just us. Yeah. But it's like I guess our thing is like confronting that is the basis and the foundation of like to live a better
right.
life, you know? It's an interesting topic. Yeah. People ask me the same thing. They're like, I have three sponsees right now. And it can be, they're both, two of them are in their fifth step and one of them's on their ninth. So it's like, it's been a lot,
right?
You know, they're want to get on Zoom every day for a few hours and it's like, okay, let's do it. And, you know, I think like I even told my mom, I'm like, oh, I got a bunch of stuff going on. I got these sponsees. And she's like, why do you have three sponsees? Like, she was like giving me a bad time about it.
Yeah.
I'm like, mom, because like that, you know, I'm a sick motherfucker. You know? Like,
I'm like,
fuck. She doesn't get it. Some people just don't get it. And it's like, but rewarding nonetheless. It feels good to, it's like part of the living amends too.
Yeah.
It's like I've fucked over so many people and like being able to give that back freely.
Yeah.
And it's also in a way kind of self-serving, right?
Yeah.
It does keep me clean. It makes me feel good about
it. It's one of the paradoxes about the program.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like by helping other people, I'm also being selfish because I get to stay clean another day.
You know
what I mean? So.
Yeah.
Right on, dude.
Sweet.
Dude. I really appreciate you coming and talking, dude. I do. So Mountain House Recovery, right?
That's the name? Mountain House Recovery, yeah.
What's what do you have like a deadline when you plan to open?
I think July 1 is where we're going to be. Taking dudes in
July 1st. Okay.
Yeah.
Sweet. Well, I wish you all the success in the world with that.
Yeah, man.
If I can help with anything in that, you just let me know, dude.
Sweet. I will. We're hoping it's going to be like open door kind of policy, like presence. We're hoping to like open a meeting to the public that's on property, hopefully outside, and get like a fire pit going and do some barbecues. that are kind of open to everybody.
Yeah, so. let us know. I'm like fucking grilling every weekend.
Hell
like,
yeah. There we go.
Down. Bro, I just
good recovery and good grilling. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's like, who wouldn't want to hang? You know, so it should be cool. And like I said, we're kind of keeping it small and, you know, looking to kind of keep the culture nice and healthy in the beginning. And, you know, and like a nice in between of like what you might get at the Foundation House, like really entry indigent level to what you're dealing with like going to a, you know, a big step down program.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, what it looks like afterwards. That's, yeah. That's what I think that's where I personally feel a lot of like programs lack.
Yeah. Know? It's the immersion, right? It's the immersion piece. It's like, that's what we're hoping to do. And I think most of the people that we'll be looking at will be like, hopefully have 15 to 30 days clean. We're not a detox program. Yeah. We're not taking dudes straight off the street. And people that are motivated, that are like curious about being outside. Cause it is, it's like, you know, it's kind of hot and trendy and it's like, it's fun and it's exciting. It's good to move your body. Like talking about like that trauma realm. It's right. Like, it is healthy to be getting outside and staying active and not, you know, playing video games and beating your dick all day long. So
I like doing, I like know, doing like, all of those right, things.
So it's about balance, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I don't want to go too far there. But yeah, good, healthy balance. So we're super excited about it. And everybody in the community so far that I've talked to and have been, you know, as far as like getting literature together and meeting lists. And I know it's been a while since I've been out here. So it's just been exciting to talk about it and reconnect with everybody and like, hey, I'm still here and I'm alive. Hopefully I'll be around more. Yeah. So
no more bus.
Yeah. This is gone. Yeah. This is gone, by the way. It came to its demise. So yeah.
Sick, man. Well, thank you so much again for
coming. Yeah. I appreciate you guys having me. This has been super fun to chop it up. And
well, after you get a couple months down the line with Mountain House Recovery, we'll come back. We'll talk about your success
and heck yeah.
How you feel about it, you know?
Yeah, heck yeah. I'm stoked about it.
Maybe super stoked. Maybe you'll expose us to some more stories.
I know. Maybe we can get a couple other sickos in there. I'm looking for like the sick of the sick. I want some real sick pups in there. Yeah. We can have a little tag along and get kind of an inside perspective, you know, client that'd be perspective.
Kind of dope too.
Yeah. Kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sweet. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. No problem, dude. Thank you. Everybody listening, have a beautiful fucking day.
Fucking beautiful.